Don Henley, you know what? I didn't know you lived in Dallas.
I do.
How long have you lived in Dallas?
Since 1994.
Well, give your address so people can drive by your house.
Yeah, come on over. Party at my house.
But originally from Atlanta, Texas?
No. Close.
Close?
You missed it by 13 miles. Oh. I'm from Linden, Texas.
Oh, where Miranda Lambert's from. No, she's from Lindale.
Lindale,
and
yeah.
I'll tell you why I thought you were from Atlanta, Texas, because mm-hmm. I went to college with a bunch of people from Atlanta, Texas, and they all bragged that you were from there.
They did, yeah. Well, I'm from a lot of places.
Okay, know, are you?
every town in East Texas claims me, I think. No, I grew up in Linden, which is 13 miles from Atlanta. They're both in the same county. They're over uh-huh. in Cass County, and I have some cousins over in Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
But Linden is my hometown.
Well, we're all excited about a brand new Eagle C coming out on October 30th, and I have to tell you, I was a bit surprised. I think a lot of people were that there's new stuff from the Eagles, because first of all, the title of one of your last albums, the concert album, Hell Freezes Over, mm-hmm. kind of tongue in cheek,
yeah.
like we were never going to get back together. And now you guys are in studio, and that whole creative process. How did that all happen?
Well, as everybody knows, we got back together in 1994. And we have been, I've talked to a few writers lately who seem to think that this is some sort of a comeback album, or that we've been broken up mm-hmm. and we just got back together.
Yeah.
Because there was one 21-year-old gal from Rolling Stone magazine that came to interview me. And she said, you know, well, why did the band get back together? I said, honey, we've been back together since 1994, and we've been breaking box office records all over the world. We've been touring a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like we just woke up one morning and said, oh, let's do an album now. Mm-hmm. We've been trying to do this record for 6 or 7 years now.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, as I've often said, it's not like it was in the old days when we were young and single. You know,
yeah.
And you know, when you're young and single, you can do whatever the hell you want with your time.
Uh-huh.
your time is your own. But now we're all grown up and we all have families.
Uh-huh.
We all have young kids, mm-hmm. you know. I've got 3 kids all under the age of 12,
mm-hmm.
and that's a full-time job, believe me. And Glenn's got teenagers, and he's also got a 5-year-old son. Joe's got 2 young boys. Schmidt's got high school kids.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we have other priorities and other things to do. So we've been kind of recording this thing or taking stabs at it, for years now. But we really finally got serious about it a couple of years ago
mm-hmm.
and started recording. And it took us a while to get our groove back, you know, because we just hadn't made any records. And, you know, the technology has changed, and mm-hmm. we just kind of had to work our way into it. You know, we've never done anything real fast.
Yeah.
Finally, you know, about three weeks. We've only finished this thing about 3 weeks ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And you know, I was still tweaking the cover, you know, the graphics and the colors on
uh-huh.
on the album cover, the CD cover, as late as 2 weeks ago, you know, and so, you know, it's at the pressing plant now. They're manufacturing these things, and it's a double album. It's got 20 songs on it.
Oh, I see. That's another thing I didn't know.
Yeah.
Wow, that's fantastic. If you're an Eagles fan.
Yeah, for the price of a single album.
Yeah.
So I think people will get value for their money, and we're pretty excited about it.
Talk a little bit about the writing process. I want to get to the recording process in a while, but did you guys write most of these songs by yourselves? Did you use outside writers? I mean, did you, you know, collaborate with some of your friends in the music industry? There's 20 songs, so I mean, yeah. Sure, there's a lot of different processes.
There are, and we did collaborate with a lot of other people. I mean, Glenn and I wrote some of the stuff.
Uh-huh.
Our new guitarist, a fellow named Stuart Smith, co-wrote a lot of the songs on this album. Incredibly talented guy. From Virginia, and the single, interestingly enough, was written by our old buddy J.D. Souther.
Yeah, I saw that on the credits.
Who
the
was
single.
Born and raised in Amarillo, Texas,
mm-hmm.
and that song actually is 35 years old.
He wrote it that long ago.
He wrote it. Yeah, it was on his first solo album,
uh-huh.
which came out in 1972. And I don't know how many copies that album sold, but I think the song is going to be brand new to most people who hear
yeah.
it. And Glenn decided that we ought to re-record that song because it just sounds like the Eagles, you know.
That's exactly what we said. When we got that single, we played it that very first morning that we got it, which I will tell you is very, very rare in radio these days. Mm-hmm. And I was so excited when I heard it, and I told Terry, I said, I'm going to play you a song, I'm not going to tell you who it is. And we played it live on the air, and he figured out it was you guys mm-hmm. in a matter of like 30 seconds.
Right. Well, that's exactly. That was our goal. Uh-huh. So thank you. Yeah, we just thought it seemed right. You know, it's got that take it easy, already gone kind of feel, and so we just recorded it. We also included some of the other songwriters that we've worked with over the past few years, a fellow named Jack Timpson,
mm-hmm.
who is from San Diego, California, and a songwriter named Larry John McNally, who I've recorded some of his songs on my solo records before. That song For My Wedding, he wrote that.
Mm-hmm.
So, a British fellow named Paul Carrick, who is one of my favorite singers.
Oh, yeah, from Squeeze.
He's been in a lot of groups.
Yeah.
Mike and the Mechanics. He was in, and he's been a solo artist for quite some time. He's a Welshman actually, and he wrote a beautiful R&B type ballad that Timothy Schmidt sings on his new album. So there were a lot of other people included, but basically we wrote most of the stuff in house.
Now you said you wanted people when they heard How Long to think of immediately think this was an Eagles song,
mm-hmm.
and it really does kind of reflect the music that you played at the beginning of your career. Is the rest of the album like that, or is it all over the spectrum?
It is all over the spectrum. There is, is subject wise, there are a lot of love songs on the record, a lot of boy and girl songs. There's some political commentary, we stepped out there pretty good, So it's all over the place. And musically speaking, too, there's rock and roll, there's country music, a little bit of folk and bluegrass influences, some rhythm and blues and soul influences on there. We basically did what we've always done. We've been labeled as a country rock band, but we kind of incorporate all kinds of American music in our sound. And I think that's one of the reasons that we have this longevity is because we do incorporate a lot of different styles of music that are near and dear to people's hearts in this country, and this album is no exception. I think we've done it better in some cases on this record. I think the songwriting has matured a lot, and I'm quite proud and pleased with most of the songs on this album.
You know, what's interesting is radio has changed and the music formats have changed. Your sound, which you wanted to sound like an early Eagles record, was played on rock stations, and now it fits so well with country stations. Back in the early days, were you guys so concerned with where you fit in, or were you just like, this is the kind of music we want to play?
Yeah. No, we never thought about the categories. You know, we were out with that. That was always kind of a head scratcher for us. These little boxes that, I mean, I guess you gotta categorize people, but we never were very concerned about that. And you're right, country music today sounds a lot like what we were doing back in 72 and throughout the 70s. It's an interesting phenomenon.
The Common Thread CD, which was your music sung by different country artists, came out about 10 years ago. It seemed to fit so well, and that was even 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And your music done by other artists, I mean, we still play the cuts off that. In fact, right before you came in, we played Desperado, which just made me laugh. I thought, hey, Don Henley's coming in, we're playing Desperado. I want to ask you about the recording process, because you mentioned that the studio had changed so much. And was it difficult to get back into the studio? I mean, is the process a lot different because everything's digital now?
Yeah.
Did you dislike it more? Did you like it more?
Well, we've always basically liked the sound of analog tape, that's warmer and stuff. But once we got into this digital thing, we started buying all the new equipment, and it really does simplify the process. I mean, the editing process alone, where you used to have to use a single edge razor blade and a cutting block.
Uh-huh. Literally.
Literally.
People think you're making a joke, but no, literally.
No, you cut the tape and you put it, you spliced it together.
Uh-huh.
But now it's just to press, if you want to add an extra verse to a song, or if you want to change an arrangement,
mm-hmm.
if you want to change the key of a song,
mm-hmm.
you can do that with the computer. I mean, we don't rely on that stuff like some people do. I mean, we still sing and play our instruments, and the records we try to make them have as much of an organic quality as we possibly can. But the technology has certainly changed. We were all laughing about it the other day. I've got my own studio, and Glenn Fry's got his own studio, mm-hmm. and we both have, about $750,000 worth of equipment that became obsolete overnight, we're just sitting there with spider webs on it, so I don't know if we'll ever be able to do anything with that stuff. Kids are making albums in their apartments now,
which is a wonderful thing.
Yeah, it is. It's made it possible, but I mean, you don't have to have all this money now to create a recording studio. You can do it at home.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the biggest change. The process, as far as we're concerned, as far as songwriting and recording, is pretty much the same with us.
Mm-hmm.
But the technology has changed drastically.
Yeah, I always wonder what it would be like if at the beginning of all our careers, if we had Apple GarageBand program.
Yeah.
I mean, we would have that would have been the most wonderful thing in the world.
Yeah, no telling what we'd have done. But it's interesting to watch.
I have to ask you this because this is kind of a little bit of an obscure question, but I may never get an opportunity to ask you this again. But one of my favorite songs that you guys have ever done is an old Charles Brown Christmas song called "Please Come Home for Christmas."
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't even know when that song came out, when you guys did your recording. That's the first time I'd ever heard that.
Mm-hmm.
And now I own, I think, three or four of his CDs, and
yeah.
And it's incredible, especially his Christmas songs. How many people have recorded him, and people don't even know who Charles Brown is. Were you a fan of his from before? How did that song come across? I mean, how did that song happen?
Yeah. Charles, I've been a fan of his for a long time. He passed away a few years ago.
Yeah, that's another thing. I didn't realize until just a few years ago that he was still even living. I think a lot of people were surprised by that.
Yeah, and he probably didn't get paid for a lot of those recordings. But I heard that song, gosh, when I was in junior high or high school.
Uh-huh.
They used to play it on a station in New Orleans. I think Charles Brown might have been from that area. A station called WNOE, which was a big 50,000-watt
mm-hmm. blowtorch, yeah.
It was the only station I could get at night. And so I heard that song early on. And we were doing when we were recording in the 70s down in Miami, Florida, we just decided to do it one year. It was fall, and we decided, let's just do this on a whim.
Uh-huh.
And it's never been on one of our albums, but we are going to put it on this album that we're putting out on October 30th is coming out, and then there's going to be a deluxe version of it,
mm-hmm.
which will have Please Come Home for Christmas and I think Hole in the World or some other extra song,
mm-hmm.
two extra songs on it with more photographs and a nicer pack. People
yeah.
do that now. It's just something they told us that everybody was doing. So we said, okay, fine. So it's going to be on that. It'll be the first time it's ever been on an album. It's a great song. People seem to love it, and here if it is included with Hole in the World, I think here in wartime it'll have a special resonance for a lot of people who
mm-hmm.
have maybe sons and daughters who are serving overseas. That's what we're going to do with that.
I bet you take some pride, though, in a person like myself opening someone up to the music of Charles Brown, and learned a little bit more about him, and I thought, wow, this is a pretty cool little artist here, and I never knew anything about him until that record came out.
Yeah, he wrote a lot of wonderful songs, and you're right, a lot of people have recorded that song. I think even Bon Jovi, your new country star, recorded that song.
When you were growing up in East Texas, what did you listen to, and what were some of your influences, and where did you get from that point to where you are today?
Well, I was fortunate to have two parents who loved music, and my grandparents too. My grandfather had one of those old wooden radios, and he would
mm-hmm.
sit around and listen to country music. He loved fiddle music.
Uh-huh.
And so he would listen to baseball games, and he would listen to fiddle music and smoke cigars and sit in the rocking chair.
St. Louis Cardinal games?
That was yeah, exactly. And, there were no Rangers then.
Yeah.
So he would listen to that, and my grandmother was always walking around the house singing hymns, The Unclouded Day, which I recorded
uh-huh.
on my first solo album. My parents loved big band music. They would listen to Glenn Miller. My dad was in World War II, so they listened to all that era
yeah.
of music, and Guy Lombardo and Benny Goodman and all that kind of stuff. There was always music playing in the house, and my mom started buying me 45 RPMs. I think my first rock and roll record was Elvis's version of Hound Dog.
Mm-hmm.
She brought that home to me one day, and then I started collecting, Jerry Lee Lewis and the Everly Brothers and Fats Domino and stuff like that. I had friends who played music. My best friend, Richard Bowden, who was part of a country duo.
Pinkard Bowden.
Yeah.
Oh, I did not know that.
We grew up together.
Oh, really?
In that same town,
uh-huh.
in London. And he and his dad had a band, and that
uh-huh.
was the first band I was in. We were Dixieland Jazz Band,
uh-huh.
rehearsed in their living room. And my dad used to take me to work with him sometimes in the summertime. He had an auto parts store in the next town over from us, Dangerfield, Texas, and it was 21 miles away. And I used to go to work with him, and we would listen to the Louisiana Hayride.
Yeah. Which is where Elvis really got his start.
Which is where Elvis' first broadcast performance.
Yeah.
I have some photos of that, and I have a recording of it. And that's where Hank Williams and Johnny Cash and a lot of people performed on that show. It was kind of the Louisiana version of the Grand Ole Opry. And I have a lot of memorabilia and stuff from that show. So we used to listen to that, to country radio, Patsy Cline and Hank Snow and Ernest Tubb and mm-hmm. and all those, and Red Foley and all those great pioneers of country music. And my dad loved Tennessee Ernie Ford. We used to watch his TV show all the time, you know. So I had a lot of exposure to a lot of different kinds of music, and I'm the older I get, the more I appreciate that now. And as I said, I listen to WNOE in New Orleans,
uh-huh.
and you know, New Orleans is its own
yeah.
musical planet. You know, mm-hmm. I heard stuff on that station that you never heard anywhere else. It was a rich upbringing. My hometown is the birthplace of Scott Joplin.
I did not know that.
Who's the father of ragtime
yeah.
music, and a fellow named T-Bone Walker, who was the guy that was credited with first playing the Delta Blues on electric guitar. He went on to play a lot of clubs in Dallas and on Deep Ellum, and then he moved on out to Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And every year now, my friend Bowden produces the T-Bone Walker Blues Festival in Linden, Texas, at the Music City, Texas Theater down there. We've converted the old American Legion Hall into a music theater. It was built in 1950, and he has that festival every July, I think it is. So I'm really grateful to be from small town Texas.
Now, you're also a man who has concerned himself with more than just the music world. I know there's been a lot of causes that have been dear to you. Like, one of them was Walden Pond,
mm-hmm.
And you're trying to save that from development. Can you kind of set the scene on that?
Okay. Well, my dad, I grew up outdoors.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, it was a great life in a small town because you could roam around. You know, in those days, you didn't have to worry about being abducted.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I rode my bike to school, uh-huh. walked to school sometimes.
Yeah.
And everybody knew whose kid you were, you know, and we slept at night with our doors unlocked.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a great way to grow up. And so I had a big appreciation for the woods. My dad used to take me fishing all the time. And then I went to college. My dad helped me save money to go to college. That was his fondest dream because my dad never finished the eighth grade. He grew mm-hmm. up on a farm.
Mm-hmm.
Over near Sulphur.
Which was very common in its time.
Yeah, exactly. Eighth grade was about as far as you went.
Yeah.
But I've seen some tests from back then, and eighth grade was tough. Man, they got serious real quick. And so his fondest dream was that I go to college. So I went for 3 years.
Two?
First I went to Stephen F. Austin, then uh-huh. in Nacogdoches, and then I transferred up to University of North Texas, uh-huh. up in Denton, which at that time was called North Texas State University. Mm-hmm. And I studied English Lit, you know, philosophy, stuff like that, and was introduced to the works of Henry David Thoreau, who, as some people know, is the father of the American conservation movement. You know, he was the first guy to write about it and talk mm-hmm. about it 150 years ago. He was a little bit ahead of his time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was before anybody heard about this global warming stuff.
Yeah.
And he lived in that little cabin. He moved out of his parents' house when he was 28 years old. On July the 4th, he was establishing his own independence. And moved into this little cabin by this pond in Massachusetts and lived there for 2 years and 2 months and 2 days. And he kept a journal while he was there, which became this book, Walden,
mm-hmm.
which is the most widely read, one of the most widely published and widely read books in the English language. And I discovered that when I was about 19 or 20 years old. And my dad was suffering from heart disease at the time. And the book meant a lot to me. You know, I kind of rediscovered the outdoors and
mm-hmm.
got a lot of spiritual nourishment and support out of that. And so back in 1989, I saw a piece on television on CNN where they were going to develop all this land around Walden Pond. We don't really preserve the pond. We preserve the land around the pond. The
yeah.
pond belongs to the state. It's a state park.
Yeah.
It's a 60-acre pond. It was formed by a glacier, and there are 300 acres around it that are owned by the state of Massachusetts. But the entirety of Walden Woods is 2,680 acres. So that's our business, is to preserve that.
Uh-huh.
Over half a million people come there every year from all over the world. It's like a shrine.
Yeah. And
people know about it everywhere. And so that's what we do. And then I've been doing that for 17 years now. We've raised about $35 million, and we preserved a lot of land around that pond. We also have an institute. We have the largest Thoreau collection in the world.
Mm-hmm.
We do education. You know, we teach kids and we teach teachers, and teach them to appreciate conservation and to, you know, plant trees and things like that. We teach them to appreciate home place.
Yeah.
We do what is called place-based education, which is we teach kids to identify and appreciate things in their hometown that are worth saving, whether it's a forest or a building or a vacant lot, anything uh-huh. like that. And we teach them how to go back home and be active in their communities and to preserve these things. So then after I did that, I brought that idea back home to East Texas with my Caddo Lake project.
Which is the only naturally formed lake
naturally
in Texas.
In Texas, and it's an extraordinary place. It straddles the Texas-Louisiana border, and that's where I caught my first fish back in the late 1950s. So I have a nonprofit organization down there, and we do the same thing. We protect some of the habitat down there, and we do educational projects in some high schools and colleges in the area. And so that keeps me pretty busy, that and the eagles and uh-huh. child rearing. I don't sleep much.
Well, each one of those is a full plate in itself. Don Henley, the brand new album, Long Road Out of Eden, coming out October 30th, and also How Long, the new single. You're going to be on the CMAs coming up?
Going to be on the CMAs, yeah.
Yeah. How did that start? Did they contact you? Or?
Yeah, they contacted us, mm-hmm. and we've never done an award show before.
Really?
We kind of stay away from them.
Nothing like. No, why do you like to stay away from them?
Just cause. You know, it just gets a little over the top sometimes.
Yeah.
But this is one that we'd like to do,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to do it. I've done the CMAs before, actually. I sang on the CMAs back a few years ago.
With Trisha Yearwood.
My friend Trisha Yearwood.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Yeah, I do remember that now.
So we're looking forward to that. We're pretty excited about that.
Yeah, definitely looking forward to that. And once again, we'll look for your brand new album coming out October 30th. And the first single, of course, How Long? Moving up not only to the country charts, but I've noticed it's on all different type of charts, which I think is a wonderful thing. Even the oldie station is playing, which I think is very cool.
I'm thrilled with the whole thing.
Yeah, very. Don Henley, thank you so much for stopping by our studios.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor. Thank you.